This is episode 3 of Omaha Talks. This week we sit down with Chris Mockmuller of Elevers. So pour some Rumple Mints and enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 3 of Omaha Talks. I am your co-host, Parker Steele, in the basement of Olivers with co-host Brandon Erbel.
Hey, what's up?
And our guest today is Chris Mockmuller. Say hello, Mock.
Hey, how's it going?
We are here today to discuss the bar that Mock owns and that I've lived at on and off over the last 10 years, Olivers Pub. And to start things off, Mock, why don't you tell us how you started working here?
I started working here, let's see, in 2003. It was a friend of mine, also named Chris. He was like, hey, man, you ever been out of this place called Olivers Pub? They started doing shows recently, and I don't know, it's kind of cool. It's kind of like this divey little weird joint. And I was like, well, that sounds great. Let's go check it out. We started coming down here, and I guess it wasn't too long. We were hanging out here a few months, and then I started coming down here for happy hours and on the weekends. And
and you're not from Omaha?
No. Well, I'm from Council Bluffs.
Okay. So
what you can edit that out if you want.
Yeah. What were you doing in Omaha? I mean,
well, okay. I'd gone to school at the University of Iowa.
Okay.
For a couple of years. And then I moved back home, but I moved to Omaha. I moved up to over there on 43rd Street and Dodge, 43rd and Dodge by that Wendy's, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, lived and worked over here after that. So it was, I spent most of my time in Omaha and played music in Omaha. And
yeah.
Most of my friends were in Omaha, so.
What were your first impressions of Olivers? I mean, what year are we talking about?
It was great. This was 2003, and Sean had just, one of the previous owners, he had just put up, redecorated with record covers.
I was just going to ask.
So that was the first, yeah.
If it was into that era.
That was the, that's when that happened. Before it was just, you know, paneling and green paint and a bunch of NASCAR stuff and things like that. And he was like, oh, let's change the aesthetic here.
Yeah.
And stapled up hundreds of record covers. And that still, you know, is
yeah,
what we got. And it still is sort of drives the aesthetic, I think.
So absolutely. He was responsible for that?
Yeah.
He was? Awesome.
Yeah. And Sean was the one who started having bands down there, too. He thought, like, you know, I think it was partly, you know, business-driven and his own interest in music and live music and stuff, wanting to, you know, provide a stage for those who may not be, you know, playing
yeah
out that much. And that's kind of how it started. And they started with open mic as well. With I think it was Crunch. I think he recently passed away, actually. But yeah,
what was his name?
Crunch.
Crunch. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was Ed or Ed. Well, I'd have to check. I have to double check that. But
so so they were doing open mic and stuff. Were there any bands playing here when you were coming to hang out? Like, because you're not from Omaha, so were there any bands that were doing shows here eventually that kind of led you into hanging out here more, or did you meet people? Like, how did that dynamic
Well, like occur? I said, so when I started hanging out, they'd only just started doing shows. And they were doing, like, let's see. Trying to get some of the early ones.
Go back.
I mean, like,
take it back.
But Brendan Greenwalsh was in one or two of the groups that was playing
okay
down here. I can't remember if it was the Kenobis or Life After Laser, like what became Life After Laser.
Yeah, Life After Laser.
And
where did you go?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So it had just started to get going. And I think we started hanging on down here, and I was like, dude, we need to book a show down here.
Yeah.
And that was back when I was playing in a group called Bleeders for Treats. And that was my first group that I started right when I moved here.
Where'd you meet the people in that band?
Well, one of them was a council. Well, actually, I guess it was a couple of Council Bluffs dudes who were in Omaha. And, you know, we were chumming around and just kind of put it together, you know, based on that friendship pretty much. And then kind of worked our way in the scene. And I had started working at Borders in 2000 when I moved here. And
that was my first job in Omaha.
Was it the one on 72nd?
No, I worked at the 132nd.
I was the one on 72nd at Dodge, flagship. So I started working there, and I met Chris Fisher, who lived at the Gunboat, which was a house just catacorner from Brothers on Farnham.
Okay.
30
what are we talking before Hotel Frank and Power Pad and that?
Yeah, it was like, so yeah, so it was before and after some of those.
But that same location. The
one. Yes. Yeah, okay. Well, that one, I think there was one in the middle.
Yeah,
right.
Of the block, and this was the big one on the corner. Okay. But they were all kind of one big house. I think it was an old mansion or something.
Confused the shit out of me when I moved, you know.
But when I first moved here, like the hardcore scene, it was the Power Pad. And then a few years later, it was Hotel Frank. And I mean, that's, I think the last was a Hotel Frank.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Gunboat, I think, predated both of those. Okay.
Gunboat. I think I've never heard that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this was
Fort House,
17 years ago.
Yeah.
This is 17 years ago. And
Jesus Christ.
A bunch of those guys were from Pennsylvania. They're from Lancaster.
Okay.
And they kind of, you know, got stranded here on their way out to Portland. Not really stranded, but.
Right.
Chris was buddies with Connor. Sorry. Quit fiddling with your mic.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
He was buddies with Connor. He'd put out some tapes for him.
Okay.
You know, in years previous, back in, must have been the late 90s. And so they're kind of buddies, and Connor's like, you know, stop on out or whatever. And then they're like I said, they were wanting to go to Portland, a few of the other guys, because Mario Alderfer was a part of that, and he ended up playing drums in Leaders Retreats.
Okay.
I worked with Chris at Borders. So then I started hanging out with those dudes at their house. And I was on 43rd, so we just walk over. And at the time, before I started at Borders, though, I worked at McFoster's.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. That's a whole other story, though.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story. Anyway.
We can get back there.
So we started hanging out at Gunboat, and then I started meeting people, you know, people from groups that ended up being, you know, gaining lots of popularity.
Yeah.
Like Cursive and The Faint and Bright Ice and stuff like that. So
cool. So when did you actually start working at Olivers?
Okay, 2003.
Yeah.
It was only like, I don't know, maybe 6 months after I started hanging out.
No shit.
Yeah.
Got right in there.
I mean, it was, gosh, I don't know. I mean, maybe I hung out here a year before I started. But I started coming down on happy hours, like I said. And then I started talking to Sean, because Sean worked happy hours. And he worked on the weekends. And that's when I'd be around. And we started riffing about music. And he was like, hey, if you know some bands, to, you know, that we should book down here. And I was like, well, I do.
Yeah.
I do. And so we started throwing together a few shows with him. And then he was just like, hey, man, why don't you take a Tuesday night? The one guy who's doing it, not doing it, you want to work? I was like, sure. And then at the time, I still worked at Ink Tank.
Oh, shit.
No, not Ink Tank. Sorry. Drastic. Well.
Impact.
Impact Merchandising.
And Drastic Plastic.
Yeah.
When it was, in the back time. Of Drastic Plastic. Right?
I worked there when it was in the back, and then I left for a while, did some other terrible job, and then I worked.
Did you start the fire? Did you start the fire?
At Drastic?
Yeah.
No. That wasn't me. That was probably Cooper.
It probably was Cooper.
Yeah, Cooper or Pat, one of those
fuckers. So
you started taking Tuesday nights. What were some of the first bands that you booked? I mean,
well, I don't remember like actively booking the bar. I would just tell Sean or people in these bands, like, if you want to play a show, you know, go down to Olivers and talk to Sean. He's there on Friday or Wednesday or whatever. So that's how that would work. I didn't actively book anything. And at the time, I think Matt Wibke was renting us his PA and shit like that. And but yeah, so 2003, I started in December 2003, and my first night I got robbed at gunpoint.
Let's hear that story.
So there was all of about two of us in the bar. James, the cash register man, from 49er. James used to clean 49er and be there to accept deliveries and stuff. He was hanging out. It was Bob Halleck, who was training me. It was his shift on Tuesday nights, but he was giving it up, and myself. And it was a snowstorm that night. And we were just, you know, he was just kind of showing me around. He had gone around to the jukebox. He's like, I'm going to play some tunes. And in walked, then the jukebox is right by the front door. And in walked just two guys with big parkas on. They start stamping their feet. And then they look around. I'm like, oh, this isn't good. And they both pull out pistols. Put one right to Bob's head.
Oh.
And then one at me. And basically just like, where's the safe, you know? To Bob, and the, you know, I'm already on the floor.
This is such...
I'm already on the floor.
Who looked at this bar 15 years ago, whatever, and was just like, yep.
Well, they were opportunists. I mean, it was a snowstorm. So they take advantage of not a lot of people being around. Of course, what they don't think about is that there's no money in a bar at night when it's not busy.
Right.
So, you know, they got whatever was in their 150 bucks or whatever, but... you know, it was hairy there for a second. That's where the safe. And I was like, "Look, I don't know anything about a safe. If there is a safe, I don't know the combination." And they were just like, "Whatever." And they took the one dude's wallet and went around to the register, emptied that, and then you were gone. You know, the whole thing probably lasted 45 seconds.
And you've been a bartender for how long?
15 minutes.
Yeah. So like welcome to the bar.
And then you stayed around for 15 years.
Yeah.
So well, we called Sean. He's like, we got robbed. He's like, oh, shit. He's like, I'm on my way. And he came down, just locked the door, and then we all got drunk.
Yeah. Well, that's what you do.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. So
moving – okay, that happened – you said 2003?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move up to – and if you guys don't know this, Mock plays – in the band Ladyfinger, as well as So-So Sailors. And when did Ladyfinger happen? Because I started coming around, Brandon and I started coming around 2006, probably, is 2005, 2006, and you were popping off with Ladyfinger at that point.
Yeah.
But let's
we had just put out the first record around that point.
Was it the black one with the gold firecrackers on it?
Yeah, that was the little EP we did, and then the full length was shortly after that, yeah.
And do you think, like... as far as those guys, like Jamie and Pat Oaks and
Ethan,
were those all relationships formed just based on the bar and whatnot?
No. I mean, I'd known all those guys before.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'd been hanging out in Omaha since I was 20.
Right.
This is 3 years later, so I'd already, you know, established relationships and met a lot of people and
sure.
And stuff before that. So that band had already sort of began. We had started playing already by 2003. It was right around that time. Bleeders had also just, like, we were about to finish a full-length record with that group, but then the bass player moved without telling us. And...
Oh.
That's a weird thing. Ryan was a weird guy. Okay. Anyway... that's a different story.
Sure.
Lots of stories.
So we had been playing, but had just started at that point.
Okay, so when I showed up, or when we showed up, because I know we can't say this enough on Omaha Talks, Brandon and I are both from Grand Island, Nebraska. We're not from Omaha.
Yeah, we know.
Hey, Parker's the one that keeps bringing it up.
I can't help it.
Hometown pride.
But not really. More of a disclaimer.
Yeah, it's more of a disclaimer.
Yeah,
sure. Explain why we are the way we are.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. But so when we came here, it was just, I felt like, you know, I showed up in Omaha and it was kind of hard to, you know, things were happening. The Saddle Creek thing was blowing up and it was kind of hard to figure out or navigate that whole thing. And I can't say that I found that here. I found the Shanks here. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like this bar was the place that you could go to and see good bands and see a variety of bands. I think one of the first shows I saw here was like Articulate. And I had never seen a hip hop show before. Like, I mean, it was.
We never pigeonholed ourselves, or, you know, pigeonholed the bar as being like we're a punk bar or, we're a, you know, or anything like that. We always had the belief that if it was good music, then it was worth playing. So we sort of would discern Yeah. You know, between we use discretion, but at the same time, as long as it was good,
sure,
they could play.
Yeah.
And even if it wasn't good, if we knew they'd bring a lot of people, that'd be fine.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the Terminals, Brimstone Howl, mm-hmm. So the Shanks. I mean, yeah. Bloody Finger. I mean, there's tons of bands during that era that I remember seeing.
Yeah. I mean, what turned me on to this bar, I mean, obviously the decor, which we've already talked about, but just walking in, I hate to use the word aesthetic in the same sentence as Oliver's because it seems a little counterintuitive, but it is true. It was a bar, you know, and that's kind mm-hmm. of where we came from, was not fancy pants, this and that. So bars like Oliver's and also worth mentioning the 49er were like, oh, this is where it's at. You know, mm-hmm. this is where I can come get drunk for $20, see some rock and roll, you know, and, yeah. and be around like-minded people. Mm-hmm. It was just awesome. But when – okay, so we're talking around – let's jump up ahead. So right now, today – or was it – it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. Let's put our beers in the air because 5 years ago yesterday, you and some friends bought this bar.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Happy five fucking year anniversary.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's talk about how that went down. What led up to you guys coming together and buying Oliver's?
I had me and another friend of mine tried to buy the bar in 2007. We were just buying the main bar because, for those of you out there that don't know, there's the pub, and then across the parking lot we have the sand volleyball courts, which is sort of you know, just a weird little.
But very popular. I mean, I know so many people that play, you
know,
volleyball.
But you wouldn't think that a lot of people, you know, because there's two very disparate yeah. kind of entities, oh, yeah. you know, but they're a part of the same business. So anyway, we were going to buy the pub in 2007, and Mello was going to retain the volleyball. Well, at the time, the land had been sold, unbeknownst to us, and the new landlord came in and kind of, you know, was going to increase the rent and all that stuff by a substantial amount, and we sort of balked and decided not to move forward.
So the bar was kind of in a state of influx because you guys didn't necessarily want to fight with the property owner, per se, or adhere to his new, I don't want to say list of demands, but his upping the rent. Like, how did that all
get negotiated? He was going to raise the rent by 50%, and we just thought Jesus. That was devaluing the business considerably based on whatever negotiated price we had at the time. So we were just, you know, we just sort of paused and then ended up doing Workers instead.
Yeah, let's talk about Workers Takeout.
So, and that was right next door. There had been this vacant space next to the bar for a long time. And just a tiny little space. And I was like, why don't I just have a little takeout joint in there? And then started thinking about what kind of food I thought was missing from the area and what I thought would do well and also fit within that sort of, you know, the confines of such a small area.
Yeah.
And that's how that started.
That was cool, man. I love that. I had never had a Cuban press sandwich. Yours was the first I had ever tasted.
Oh, and
I did a little unofficial PR for you, if you remember. Went around to local businesses. Handed out some menus worked. And shit. It did work. But, God, that was good food.
And everybody called, like, hey, we like to order food. Do you deliver? Like, no. We're like, oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah. That was fantastic, man, having that restaurant next door. And really quick. Brandon, did you ever eat Workers Takeout?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
I mean, I've ate it. I ate it over there, and then I've continued to mm-hmm. eat it.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
I assumed as much. Yes. I didn't. Yeah. You were building a family. I'm not an this animal, time. Yeah. But all right, favorite sandwich.
No, the Cuban. I mean, the Cuban. It was the first time I ever had Cuban, and yeah, I don't really fuck with anything else but the Cuban.
The Cuban is where it's at.
You know, especially if you're not going there very often, it's just like,
ugh.
It's hard to pull yourself away from it, you know.
Yeah. How did you come to that decision about doing Cuban press sandwiches?
Because there wasn't any Cuban press sandwiches.
But where'd you encounter that before? Like, how, I mean,
well, just yeah, I think, you know, when I first saw it, it was on TV or something. It was on Food Channel,
but, okay,
you know, or something. I was like, man, that looks good, and then I started making one.
Yeah,
made one for myself, and I was like, that'd be sweet. And I was like, where can you get one of those? Oh, you can. You know, right. And then that's why the three things I started out with was Cuban roast, Cuban pork sandwiches, and Italian beef.
Yep.
And the Chicago dog, you know, the Vienna beef Chicago dog, which you couldn't
find. That's my second is the
just
Chicago.
Just right around when we opened in 2008, a Chicago dog house had also opened. So, you know.
Which one was that?
That one was out on like Blondo or something, 108, right by the interstate.
I'm sure they're really great.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it was just fantastic having a restaurant next door mm-hmm. because, you know, drinking requires food. And I do want you guys to know that we are all drinking right now, and you should be too, as long as you're not driving and as long as you're overage, mm-hmm. you know?
Correct.
So Workers Takeout, that eventually, I mean, what happened next? Like, so Workers Takeout moved downtown. Mm-hmm. You stayed at the bar. We're kind of jumping around time here, but
so I had been managing the bar that whole time,
right?
And I don't remember when I started doing that. It might have been like 2005 or something like that. Started helping Mello out. I wasn't like a GM or anything. I didn't have like complete control over everything, but I would just sort of take care of the day to day stuff. And
you were definitely the
voice the details of the bar. That Mello didn't want to deal with and things like that.
Yeah,
Mello and Sean. So, because Sean had been doing some of that stuff, but then he had kind of like backed off, and then eventually he and Mello had parted ways. But so I was president at the bar, and then I was working. You know, at that time, I got fired from Impact, and I jumping back to like 2003, I'd gotten fired from Impact. I'd been working at the bar for some months, and maybe 7-8 months. And then right at that time, I got fired. I came in and, because I got a little severance pay, I'm going to blow that. And one of my other buddies who's working Friday nights, who I'd met down here, he was like, I don't want to do Friday and Saturday nights anymore. I was like, I'll do them. He's like, you want them? Okay, let's ask Mello and Sean. And they're like, well, yeah, take them. And there you go.
Fuck yeah.
Went from one shift to two shifts, and basically that was enough. As you know, I was making more than I was working full time, working three shifts. Yeah, I worked Tuesday, maybe it might have been like Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, something like that.
Okay,
at the time, so four shifts.
So, okay, Workers moves downtown, you're currently managing the bar. Then,
well, by that time, I wasn't managing anymore.
You weren't?
No.
Okay.
No. But I was working here.
Okay. And then, okay, so.
I was just bartending.
How did that, let's talk about the transition and celebrate your 5-year anniversary. How did that happen and who was involved? Like.
Well, so jumping forward to 2012, it was just Mello. Mello had sole ownership. He may have had a. Yeah, I think he had a partner in volleyball, but anyway.
And yes, folks, that is his name, Mello.
Yeah.
We could say his first name. We don't want to.
No. Well, yeah. So he, so obviously he was interested in selling. We almost bought it in 2007.
Right.
And that was kind of always in the back pocket. And so, it was just a matter of like having the. It was the right time for Mello to let go. He was thinking about doing something else. I knew that because I was working here. My, who became my future partners, which is Matt, Tim, and Ted from Cursive. They were looking to invest in something. And it just kind of all worked out. I was like, well, I know of a bar we can maybe buy. And they loved Olivers. I loved Olivers. Yeah, we were all friends. Mello was buddies with them as well, and we just started talking. We're like, so what do you think?
Yeah,
should we? You ready to sell? And he's just kind of like, I think I am. And we talked for about 6 months and worked out details. And the whole deal probably took a year,
right?
Just for timing reasons, whatever. Partially on his end, partially on our end. And
Could you say it was a bit of a labor of love? I mean, buying any business is a risk, but you guys were doing it on a principle.
The thing is, like, I knew the business. It was a it was a turnkey business that I, you know, had insider knowledge about
right
for 10 years. So I knew exactly what I would do
mm-hmm.
to change things.
Mm-hmm.
I knew exactly what needed to be done. I knew what you could do. I knew what you, you know, all the options were laid out before us, and we already knew for a fact what kind of business it was doing. So, I mean, it was very safe
yeah.
sort of acquisition because okay. we knew so much about it.
But you had some passion, though. You were like, this is going to be mine now. I'm going to turn it up a little bit because you guys definitely turned it up.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think we just saw the potential for growth in certain areas. And it wasn't without some hard work trying to like make those things happen. Like,
sure.
So subsequently we did we did some cleaning up inside and, you know, did some light aesthetic work.
But tiki bar showed up.
Yeah. We did the tiki bar and then
beautiful beer garden.
The beer garden out back. And that happened after we bought the building to the south of us. And then we converted that space.
Okay. Yeah. That, for you guys listening, if you have not seen Oliver's or Oliver's Beer Garden, I know it's getting a little chilly, but it ain't that chilly. Go see the Beer Garden.
Yeah, it's beer garden's
beautiful.
Amazing. It's closed for now.
It's for closed sure. for the year.
In the spring.
You can go look at
in
it.
In the spring.
You can still peep it.
In the spring, get your asses to that beer garden. It's beautiful. But you guys, so last year I was in a public speaking class. Advanced public speaking.
Clearly, you're doing very well.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah, Jesus. And I had to do a persuasive speech, and I was like, what the fuck? I don't want to persuade these kids to do anything other mm-hmm. than some, you know, whatever. So I took it as an opportunity of promotion. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I'm going to persuade these assholes to go to Oliver's,
yeah.
right? I shouldn't say that. They weren't all assholes. Some of them were very nice people. So I hit up Mock for some mission statements, you know, involving some quotes. And I wish I should have printed them. It was beautiful. It was a great speech. It was video recorded. But a lot of the things that you said in that, man, I bet I could pull up the tech. Oh, no, I don't have it on my new phone. Darn it. Anyway, a lot of them were, this is a bar. I'm paraphrasing here that you know, it's staffed by musicians. Music is an integral part of this place, as well as just having a functioning, friendly joint to come party.
Yeah.
There we go.
You know, and that was one of the things is that we have a daytime crowd and we have a nighttime crowd. Two very distinct sorts of, you know, patrons.
Yeah.
But
and a volleyball crowd.
What's fun is that those crowds, like the diehard patrons from both areas, tend to intermingle here and there. And watching that happen has always been
I mean, even this really, afternoon, we yeah. got here at 2, and there was people that you had known. I mean,
yeah.
they're
yeah.
significantly like older than us, yet you had known them, and they're frequent
yeah.
patrons.
Ron and Ember. I mean,
and everybody yeah. gets along. And, yeah. and everybody's yeah. always been open to the, you know,
they were talking about each other's dogs viewpoints. And family, and yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean,
you know, I remember, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's definitely like a, everybody knows your name, troubles are all the same, mm-hmm. you know, kind of joint. And that is, I would argue, disappearing in the 21st century.
I did label Oliver's as my Cheers for several years.
There you
I
mean, go.
I know, like, I could walk in there any given day in
yeah.
a certain time, and I would know at least five or six people that
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's always had that familial vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is important to state.
And the music aspect, absolutely worth mentioning. I mean, you guys, the best shows, some of the best shows I've ever seen in my life have been directly above us.
Well,
yeah. And played, for
and
that matter.
And it was a bar first, and then kind of the music thing came second, so it's actually comfortable to hang out in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of rock clubs, when they're made to be a rock club, it's got a nice long bar and then a vacuous space.
Mm-hmm.
Behind you, it's right. not like you feel like I want to, you know, cozy up and get drunk here. It's you know, but Oliver's has that. So you had all these musicians and bands playing the bar, but they're also back there the next day hanging out.
Yeah,
you know, it wasn't just the event wasn't only when music was playing.
Yeah.
It became part of the greater...
The oeuvre.
Yeah.
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 I mean, tons never of memories. Never used that word before. Ton of memories of people, you know, all, like, crowded in, watching a band, like, you know, just...
Oh, yeah.
Drinking the night away and just hanging out and partying.
Well, there were certainly... Yeah, things can get pretty electric in there.
Oh, yeah.
When, yeah.
You throw some Rumple Mints in there and it gets wild.
That helps.
Yeah, Rumple Mints is...
It just... You know, it's cool to... I love smaller venues. And in recent years, you guys have not only obviously continued to do the music thing furiously, but introduced comedy shows... And I think that
karaoke
is, yeah, karaoke. It's just, it's, it, I mean, for lack of a better word, intimate, but it is, you mm-hmm. know, like a small stage. There's something magical about that. It kind of lessens the separation between the people performing and the people attending it. And I don't know, it just, it works, well, you
we
know.
We always mention, you know, for those that are maybe apprehensive about playing here as opposed to another place, you know, we often, describe a situation where it's like, well, you know, 70 people down here is a party. And you feel like you're, you know, it's not packed, but you're playing a rock club. And,
yeah.
And it's full. 70 people at any other venue in this town, any other venue, it's empty.
Yeah.
And you can tell. It just doesn't have the same electricity. It doesn't have the same vibe.
All, we're not all the Rolling Stones. So
well, and our overhead, our overhead was always less. So, you know, I think, and it's fine for people to want to aspire to or want to branch out and play larger venues in town. And that's fine. But Oliver certainly offers a certain, you know, bullet list of, you know, things that some of the other clubs can't.
Right. And you can't just build magic.
But we also can't have, you know, certain bands play here because
sure.
It's just too damn small.
Right.
You know, we can't accommodate on the other end. But
right. But that's okay because you're providing a stage for people that maybe...
But we have had those bands play here and it's always a great time.
Right.
You know, of course they do it knowing that they're not going to be getting... paid what they would get paid to some other place, but
yeah,
again, it's a hell of a good time.
Yeah, so pay attention, folks. Pay attention.
If some of those shows don't get announced until day of, so
a few of those. I mean, like Cursive has played here, and
yeah, few other. So if you haven't liked us on Facebook, go to Facebook, Oliver's.
Yeah, do it. And if you haven't checked out Live at Oliver's, what's that website?
Live at Oliver's.
Live at Oliver's. Is it just .com?
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. Google Live at Oliver's. And if you guys are curious about what's going on, there is an onslaught of bands that have been recorded live here.
Yeah. Dating back a few years, yeah.
Yeah, so endless entertainment. And sounds really good. And just a cool thing. I can't think of any other. Well, no, there's nobody else that's done that. And I mean, those recordings have been used for people's live albums, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely unique.
Mm-hmm.
But so originally we were going to meet up today post chili cookoff, and the Oliver's chili cookoff is a staple of this bar. It's mm-hmm. been rescheduled to January 20th, folks. Mark that in your little calendars. January 20th at Oliver's. Was it $5?
$5 to get in for an entry fee for patrons who just want to come down and eat chili and try the competing chilies. If you want to enter a chili in the competition, there is no fee to enter. You just need to contact the bartender or send a message.
A message. Send a message.
Send a message on Facebook. And we'll give you the pertinent details at that point. But
That is such a good time, man. I have come every year that I've known about it, and who doesn't want to sit around a room of, you know, a dozen, maybe, what's the most?
Our biggest year we had 22 chilies.
22 Whoa. Fucking chilies.
That's a lot of chilies.
Like, we kept blowing breakers because there's 22 crock pots plugged into, like, two wall outlets.
Yeah, it's intense. And you're going to eat all of it. There are judges. It's a competition. What does first place take this year?
It's, you know, you get a nice big trophy, $75 cash, and usually some other hand-picked prize that that is sure to please.
Yeah, January 20th. What time is that going to start?
Well, if you're entering, you need to bring your chili down here no later than 12:30. It officially starts around 1. And we let the judges get in there first, and everybody usually starts eating about 1:30.
Oh, it's such a good time. Come hungry, get some beer, you know, or whatever, some fucking, a little Stiegel, you know, and just get fat on some chili. It's so much fun. And honestly, I can't say I've been to probably 5 at this point. I haven't been to all of them, but I don't know that I've ever had a bad chili because everybody's showing their hot shit.
Oh, no, there's been some really bad ones.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. The worst ones. No. The worst ones literally taste like hot puke.
And, oh, no. Yes. I missed
there's
all
There's been
hot
a couple
puke.
Where it's just like.
Yeah, it's got like ketchup in it.
It's just too acidic. Ugh. and you know, just there's something not right.
Oh, I'm glad
in
I avoided
this.
That.
They just poor execution.
What year was it?
Ill-conceived chili recipe.
I want to say it was maybe 2010. Somebody had venison chili that took first place.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember who that was?
I think so.
It was really good.
Yeah. I'm trying. There's been 10 of these, so I'm trying to.
Right.
Is it recent or was it one of the earlier ones? I remember the first winner of the first year was Ethan Jones.
Yeah.
He took it the first year.
I was there for that one.
And, yeah, he's pretty stoked about it.
Ethan
that.
Jones. Bad motherfucker, Ethan Jones. So what else is going on, man? Are you guys doing anything to celebrate this 5 years other than.
Yeah, we're going to do something this spring, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
We're going to do we'd like to do a concert.
Sweet. And there's also.
Outside, I think we'd like to do. Nice. But don't quote me on it, but that's what we're shooting for. We're just got to work out the logistics.
We've got, we should talk about Oliver's Fest. Mm-hmm. Inception of 2008?
No. Are you thinking of.
I played the first Oliver's Fest.
Well, that was. We did a big thing in 2007 because that was Mello's and Sean's 5-year anniversary.
Maybe that was it. Where the stage
outside,
was in the parking lot.
Yeah. So we did a big concert out
and
there.
And Rick Rhythm and the Revengers.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Sunglasses and all.
Sunglasses and a tambourine. Drunk as fuck.
You and Taysh.
God, Taysho.
Austin, who gets brought up at least once a
month. Yeah, Austin and Greg have made it into every podcast.
Wasn't Jeff in that group too?
Yep, Jeff.
Who else was in
there? Jack, who has recently moved back to Grand Island. Well, not recently. It's been years. But and that was so we opened the thing, and the stage was in the parking lot, and then Dance Me Pregnant came on next.
We played that?
You weren't in the band
I wasn't
yet.
In the band
uh-uh.
yet. Oh.
Uh-uh. No. And
Schlesinger was still playing at that point.
Yes. Yep.
All right.
And I remember, okay. And then Ted even played.
Yeah, Ted played.
Yeah. So.
Ted Stevens.
So Ted Stevens for everybody. So the stage was in the parking lot. And I don't remember a whole lot. I was a wild young man at that point.
You're full of that brown liquor.
Oh, God. And but by the end of the night, what happened? Didn't the neighbors call the cops?
Well, yeah, it's an outdoor concert.
All day.
We're flanked by neighborhoods. So
residential neighborhood.
Now, we had the proper permits. It was all fine and good. We had until 10:30 p.m. noise ordinance.
God, can you imagine?
And the neighbors just could not let it go. They just were not going to give up. And the cops, you know, they have to oblige. And they kept coming over. And they'd stand out there in the lot.
Yep.
Just kind of listen to the music until one of us would, like, one of the bar staff would go and be like, hey, dudes, what's up? They're like, a lady called again. We just got to stand here for a few minutes. Like, we know you got the permits.
They're doing it again.
But we just got to, you know, we got to let her see that we are here. And so hopefully she's looking out the window. And
I mean, to be empathetic for a second, can you imagine, like Grandma Ann has got her tea brewed. She's petting the cat and fucking Rick Rhythm kicks it up at like 1 p.m. That had to suck. But she's okay now. Nobody died.
She's dead.
Everybody made it through.
She's dead.
She's resting in peace. And Oliver's Fest is still going on. And Oliver's Fest typically happens around early September.
Yeah.
Early to mid-September.
Early fall.
Mm-hmm. Which is awesome. You guys should check it out. It's a slew of bands that you guys choose that and it's an all-day deal, and it's fun as hell. Like, where else can you do that? And you know what? I know that a lot of rock and roll types are not into music festivals. I get it. Are you a music festival guy, Mark?
No.
No. Brandon?
No.
No.
I'm not the obnoxious.
No. Absolutely not.
No, I don't pay $8 for a water.
And to piss in a urinal? Like, yeah. Come on, folks. But you can come to Oliver's Fest, and you don't just have to maintain space in one area. There's shows outside. There's shows inside. It's a mm-hmm. great time.
Yeah, we've done it in varying degrees, yeah, since every year since we've owned it. And this last year was a little light. It wasn't quite as event heavy, but we still had three days of, you know, featured artists. But
quality, not quantity.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But we've done it where it's been, we've got stuff going on out front, out back, you know, all day, all night, and it's a lot of fun.
It's a good time. Or what?
We even threw an Oktoberfest in there once or twice.
Ooh,
just for good measure. Because it's right around the same time. It's usually late September.
Yeah, and going back to the beer garden that is currently closed, but it will be open in the spring.
Yeah.
It's a German beer garden. I mean, long tables.
We really went with we were inspired by, you know, European style.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. What else? Do you guys have anything outside of the Chili Cook-Off on January 20th? Do you guys have any shows coming up that you want to?
Always shows coming up.
Always shows
and
coming
we have
up.
A,
six
you know,
nights a week, maybe?
We have them booked, you know, anywhere from, you know, a couple weeks to 6 months out in some cases. So you can find those on the Facebook page for sure. We always have an updated listing, so.
And if you guys just like and follow Oliver's on Facebook, you'll get notifications about all the shows. And you know what? I'm going to throw this out there. If you don't know who the bands are and you're a little trepidatious, take a chance. Take a fucking chance. Come down. Come see somebody that you've never seen before.
90% of the time is $5. That's less than...
$5.
Less than most beers people drink these days.
Yeah, what are you going to do? And, you know, it's not like...
All the money goes to the bands. It goes to, you know, sound and the bands. So, you know...
Yeah, you're not
the house doesn't take anything.
You're not paying a promoter. You're not paying any kind of crooked-ass agency. It's all going to people that are working towards it, both on stage and off stage.
We do work with outside promoters once in a while, but they're not crooks either.
No, they're not crooks. Only so, nice promoters. Only solid promoters.
Yeah, I got some bands.
Hi. You see my girls?
Yeah.
The best
man. Who's playing? Don't worry about it. $15.
So let's get comprehensive here, man. So we've gone, you know, almost 20 years. Like, what is the biggest change? Let's say three changes that you've seen. They can be positive or negative, whatever. From your first day, I mean, not getting robbed would certainly be one of them. That kind of goes without saying. But from your first day, oh yeah, damn it. From your first day until today, what are three big changes that you've seen at Oliver's? Experience.
Well, changes. I mean, probably the biggest, most notable changes have been since we took over, and that's just you know, spatially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we added usable space to, you know, into the mix with the beer garden, and which is sizable, and then the tiki bar, and the karaoke room. Parlor, if you will. Which is available to rent. So those are three big things, the karaoke being pretty recent. But, you know, we haven't done much else as far affecting the overall vibe or the aesthetic of the bar, because that is essentially what we love about it.
Yep.
You know, people would come in and it's like, I'm just going to clean this place up. Yeah. We're like, we did.
Yeah, yeah. You should have.
This
been
is
here.
What it looks like when it's clean. We're not going to do anything more than that.
Yeah, yeah.
Modern Love's next door. I mean,
yeah, Modern Love. Yeah, they came in. It's been a couple of years now.
Yeah,
and they're doing well. It's great food as well.
Yeah.
You don't have to be vegan to enjoy it.
No, you don't. Or vegetarian. It's just good food. It's good. Come period. Check it out. And the gal, what's her name?
Issa.
She is a, God, probably at this point,
a world.
I mean, world-renowned vegan chef. Like she's legit. So it's something special. Yeah,
best-selling
so,
author. Her cookbooks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so if you guys want to come and have some beers or whatever it is you drink, and then finish with a nice healthy meal, it's right next door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is. So convenient. I mean, it's just so convenient.
It's right there.
But, yeah, I as far as changes, that is sort of a loaded question, because the nice thing is that there's been a few changes for the better. But overall, if you were coming here 10 years ago, you'd walk in and you'd be like, fuck yeah.
I can testify to that.
It's like, this is like, yep, this is Olivers.
Yeah.
So we kept everything that we loved about it, and we just accentuated those things and expanded upon that idea.
Yeah.
To make it better. We haven't, you know, gone out of our way to make sweeping changes.
But you've definitely, I mean,
because Olivers at its core was already perfect.
Right. And you guys definitely amplified that, I would say. I remember when the beer garden, okay, cigarettes, you couldn't smoke inside in whatever, 2008.
Yeah, it was right around there. Yeah.
And people were so mad. You don't smoke.
I had quit by then.
Yeah, I had quit by then too. So Brandon doesn't smoke. So it wasn't a big deal for us, but people were so mad. So I remember when the first patio was installed outside, and
can we talk about the names on the?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. Right. So former bartender Dan Kemp, mm-hmm. his younger brother Sean,
Chris,
Chris Kemp, who's a metal worker. He's super awesome. You should check out his stuff.
Super active at Hot Shops, and has his own metalworking business, yeah.
But he designed the gate, and the cast of Friends is embedded outside in front.
That's
and
right.
It was kind of a big deal. It was kind of a big deal when that went down.
It was weird, yeah. So he was down here, and he was like, "You guys want me to do anything weird? Like, I can make this fence weird. Like, do you want me to like put dicks all over it or something?" Or like oh,
maybe not
the dicks. I'm like, so you can just what, like cut images or cut out things so you can say words or images or whatever. He's like, yeah, you can do whatever you want. And so we just sat around one afternoon, me, Mello, and maybe Brendan, and I don't know who else was here.
Nice brainstorming sesh.
Yeah, and we're just like, what are you gonna do? And then I was like, I started kind of like laughing at myself. I'm like, oh, this is terrible. I'm like, what if we put the cast of Friends, like, cut that into the fence?
Not the real names. They're names in the show.
The characters, like Monica, Phoebe. Rachel, Phoebe, and everybody's just kind of like, ugh. Whoa. Like, that's weird.
It's so
like, should we do
counterintuitive that like, it works so like, well.
Why would we do that? I'm like, exactly. Why, why would we? Why would anyone ever do that?
Yeah.
So we're like, that's perfect. And it's still, to this day, people come in with varied reactions.
Yeah.
Some people be like, where the fucking cast of Friends in your fence? We be like, because of you.
Yep, exactly.
You're worked up about it for no reason. It's so stupid. And some people are just like, that is awesome. They think there's some correlation.
Like, so is this a Friends bar? That's what I've heard. So is this a Friends party? No. It's a Jeopardy bar.
Yeah.
But no, not really.
And then the smoking ban. And everybody was all like, I don't want to smoke outside. It's cold.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay. So that's when we built the shack.
The shack.
Brendan built that. Just a bunch of 2x4s and corrugated plastic.
Stuck one of those
propane
gas
heater
propane
in
heaters inside.
Yeah, it was ugly as shit.
It really was. It was a Mad Max smoke
But it worked.
Shack. It did. It did.
It worked.
Oh, man. Well, Mock, man, it's been good talking to you.
You know what? You're right.
It's always good talking to you. What else you want to talk about? Mike is yours.
Is there anything you want to know about my wife or or about children. Here we go. I'm just kidding. we were talking about that before.
Happy birthday, Joanne.
Yes. I guess I have one last thing. Rumplements. That was a big part of my time here. What's the whole Rumplements thing? I mean, it's right. Between our friends or whatever.
No.
I never had it before I came here.
Okay. Nor had I.
Yeah,
and Sean and a bunch of people he knew drank the shit out of it. And if for those listening, if you don't know what it is, it's 100 proof peppermint schnapps.
It's thick, like it's cough syrup.
It is. And, you know, it kicks like a mule, but it's so easy to drink. It's like, but it gives you, I hate to say it, but it's one of the best buzzes you can cop around here.
Oh, yeah.
Quick and easy.
It really is.
Quick and easy.
It is. You take a couple of those and a bottle of beer, you're just like,
you know, everybody talks about
you can vouch for, like, any of my friends that I've hung out with in the last 5 years, but I go to a bar and they're like, I'll buy you a shot. I go to Rumplements. It's my go-to. It's not smart. I totally regret it the next day, but Rumplements is my go-to.
Dude, everybody has the booze that they can't drink anymore. Like, oh, God, I can't drink tequila anymore. Blah, blah. That's my Rumplements. That is it. I
had to stop. You know, it was good 5 years I went with that. It was just the go-to. We even had a drop shot that we would do, which was a Rumplements dropped into a pint of Busch Light.
Did I hear a rumor that it was the most... It sold the most Rumplements in the
world. Okay, yeah.
So here's in the world.
Oh, in the world.
In the world.
Yeah. All right.
So, and here's how we come to that. If you want to visit the Wikipedia page, Rumplements Wikipedia page, it says that Olivers is the top seller.
I didn't know that.
That's awesome.
Ringing
endorsement.
So at its peak, we were going through like a couple of cases a week. And this is all shots. This isn't any mixed drinks. This is all shots.
Yeah.
So if you there's about 30. Well, we were pouring an ounce and a half shots.
Sure.
You know, there's about 28 shots or whatever in a bottle. So, you know, do the math.
Oh, Christ.
You know.
I mean, it smelled in the
hundreds
air.
Hundreds and hundreds of shots.
And didn't a rep come in? Was it a liquor rep or was it an actual rep from Rumplements that came in and handed out T-shirts and told you guys this? Did I hear this story?
Well, no, it was our reps. So here's the thing. The Lady Thinger started doing some touring in the mid-aughts.
Sure.
And, we were going around the country and ask for Rumplements and they wouldn't have it.
What
you know,
the fuck is Rumplements?
You go through entire regions that don't have it.
And then you tell them it's schnapps and they're like, what?
And sometimes they'd have one down on like the weird shelf. Yeah.
Next to the like limoncello.
And they're like, it's not even in our system. I don't even know how much it is. And like, it's like super cheap. Yeah. But so I'm like, you can't even drink this everywhere in the country.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, if you can't drink it everywhere in America, it's not like it's, you know, it's imported from Canada or something like that. It's like, you go to Europe. I tried to get it in Europe. They didn't have it in Europe.
Oh, really?
So I'm like, you know what? Because we knew that we were the top sales in Omaha, which meant we were the top sales in Nebraska.
Sure.
And by that logic,
mm-hmm.
It's not even everywhere in the U.S. They're probably the top sales in the region.
Well, don't discount yourself.
And we're probably top sales in the country.
There you go.
That being said, considering it's not everywhere in the world right. Or anywhere else in the world.
Right.
Boom.
It's still worth mentioning.
In the world. Top purveyor of Rumplements.
And it's on Wikipedia, folks.
I think you guys made that cool because you can find that shit around now. Rumplements is in Omaha.
At other bars that we would go to when we walk in, like, they would have like, oh shit!
Yep.
Put the Rumplements on ice.
Oh.
Places started keeping it around because we would show up. You know, two or three of us, and we'd each
those
be good
Olivers
for
shits
five
are here.
Or seven of them. Yeah. It wasn't always a good thing.
Oh, well, man, that's good stuff. What else you got? What's coming up? I want to remind everybody, Olivers Chili Cook-Off, January 20th,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
1 p.m. If you want to enter, send Olivers a Facebook message, and please adhere to food safety protocol, and don't put ketchup in your chili. And and look out for a five-year anniversary celebration this spring, which is going to be badass,
mm-hmm.
And looking further down the road, Olivers Fest next fall. Come on, it's a glimmer of hope.
Yep. You know. And we still have 2-3 shows a week. So there's always music, always something going on. So check it out. And it's there's not always a cover charge, so be sure to check Friday and Saturday nights before you're heading out of the house.
And it's $5. Bring your ID and $5, all right? Come and see some music. Take a chance. Brandon, you got anything else, man?
No.
Not you feel good, Mock?
He's satisfied. I'm satisfied.
Yeah. All right. Well, word to the totally. Yeah, we need to use restroom, and we're going to keep drinking. Thanks for listening today, guys, or tonight, or whenever the hell you're listening to this. And come down to O'Leaver's. Thanks, Mock.
Thanks for having me.